You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with international gallerist, curator, and podcast host, Pearl Lam. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
I grew up in a colonial Hong Kong, where we were not taught about Chinese culture. When I went back to China, I thought the art in the West is superior to the Chinese, not understanding the Chinese culture. I remember when I first went to China, I tell people I'm a Hongkongese, I'm not Chinese. It took me 10 years to go back to tell people that I'm Chinese, because then I start to be very proud of the Chinese culture. I think when I went back to Hong Kong at that point, because my ideal job at that time when I was living in UK and studying is to be a perpetual and professional student. I never wanted to return to Hong Kong to become the daughter of my father. So when I saw art and I saw a gallery and I saw all that is a way to get out from my father's control, from my parents' control, because in the art industry, they knew nothing. They have no control. They have no influence. I felt it's all in my own hands. So that is why I chose to do art. But the first exhibition I mounted, during the process, I felt that I'm completely alive again. Every cell of my body, I became so exhilarated. And I knew this is what I should be doing, and this is what I want. And I was very lucky, because then I really knew about my passion. Before then, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I mean, at that moment, I knew this is what I want to do in my life. I think art is about communication, it's about exchanges. I think it's very important that we have different voices that talk about different things. I think the uncertain time, I mean, everybody knows in the art world today, there's a lot of instability. We do not see the end of the tunnel yet, but we also knew that there is a big shift. There is a shift because of technology. There is a generational shift. And I also believe there is a geographical shift. I mean, people have been talking about the technology impact. People have been talking about the Gen Z, the change of pace of Gen Z. But I think this Gen Z change of pace is only limited to Northern America and Western Europe. When you see these Gen Z in Asia, especially in China or in Middle East, they behave very, very differently from the Gen Z from the Northern America and Western Europe. I feel that the Gen Z of Asia and the Gen Z of the Middle East, they will still continue to collect. And instead of just looking for experiences, as we have been always discussing and talking about it, I mean, this is not just limited to Gen Z. I think the whole world is like this. We always say that there's 99.9% followers. It's like herd of sheep, right? And then you only have 0.1% being a leader. The leader can be anything, can be a taste leader, can be a political leader, can be whatever. But in general, because I think you want to be accepted by your social group, you want to be like the others. You want to dress like the others. You want to live like the others. You want to have the same artwork. It's the same philosophy. Yeah, I'm the opposite. I never wanted to follow anything, because being different is also very tough. Because when I was young, when I was growing up, being different is not easy. Being different can sometimes mean that you are being boycotted because you're not like the other people. Unless you are strong enough, not caring about what other people say, just very stubbornly following your own direction. But that also means that you have to have a lot of means, and you need to ignore everyone. But my nanny passed away. My nanny was my mother's nanny. So that was my heartbreak of a time. She passed away when she was 92. My nanny was the greatest personality who inspired me, because I grew up seeing her much more than I saw my parents. She's a top lady. She always say that, you know, ignore whatever other people say. If you fail, it is right. But who knows whether you're right or not? You're young, right? But she instilled confidence. Confidence is, I think, for any young people, from children to young adulthood, I think confidence is the most important thing. But confidence cannot change to be arrogance. There is a very, very borderline difference, a hairline difference between arrogance and confidence. But I saw my generation of my friends. We grew up we didn't have so much confidence as today, the younger generation. I think the younger generation, especially in Hong Kong, I mean, because of how we grew up in our generation, they have instilled a lot of confidence, love, support, and all that. When we were growing up, I was just comparing this with my friends, and we were just saying that, wow, our parents never told us they love us. I mean, they're Chinese, right? Why would they say that? If they don't criticize you, you're lucky. So not criticizing, that means it's a compliment. I mean, it's very different from my generation of parents. They keep on complimenting their children. They keep on encouraging. We never had that. But we never see any problem with this because every one of us, we have parents like that. So it's not a problem. So we don't feel that we are actually different from all or being discriminated or being unloved. No. We know that these are our families. We see no difference about it until we all went abroad. When we saw our foreign friends' parents, especially in America, they are very different from how we grew up. And especially, you know, nowadays, there's so much discussing about mental health, discussing about parental responsibility. See, my friends is constantly in England, turning up to Parents' Day, turning up to all that. We were just saying that when we were in boarding school, we never see our parents there. So I think there's a generation change. I think the younger generation as of today, they are so much more confident than our generation. That is a completely different world. And obviously, they are confronting something that's very different from what we have confronted of. It's a complete different world. It's a technology world. Data, data, data. Also, when you talk about the Gen Z of today, they have short attention span. So when you see this short attention span, then you question, how can conceptual art last? How can we actually, in the next generation, conceptual art can still be prominent? When conceptual art requires you to read before you appreciate. These are the young mind. Young mind, they have a lot of ideals. You know, I think every student, they have so much ideals. During the time when they are in university is the time where they fight for their ideals. And these are the most impressive because they're not diluted by all their desire. Money, a great career, blah, blah, blah. But it's ideals. Those are most precious time. I don't know, you know, I always advise people when they collect an artist, they have to do research and everything. I never did it. I never do any research. When I see a piece of work, I looked at it, I'm connected with it, then I start. I usually, if I go to art fair, I will buy the work first before I will even study the artist. Sometimes I go to, like last year when I was in South Africa, I went to 80-something artists looking around to have an artist that connected with me. So I did find one or two artists there, which I think is really interesting because after I saw the artwork, then I start to ask questions. I start to study them. I start to get my curator to send me essays and everything about them. So then I start to get to know them. Then the second meeting will be talking to them, finding more about them. So that's how I connect with the artists. Like there's one Nigerian artist now, Alimi, we're representing him globally. I went to his place, I went to his house, I went to his studio. I went to the gallery. I love his work. That was in Lagos. So I started going to the house. I started going to his studio and talking to him. And I find we click. And I like the way he approach art. So therefore, we are working together to create a career path for him internationally. He's known in Lagos, but he's not known internationally. So my job is find opportunity and to create a different path for him, to make him internationally known. The beginning of the Pearl 9 podcast, what I wanted to do is to have a podcast to talk about culture. Culture can embrace all forms, all discipline, all forms. But most important thing is I like disruptors. So I was always looking for disruptors, people who does not follow the mainstream, who disrupt the normal stream, but they have created something. So as time goes by, I meet different people and I evolved and I thought that, you know, you don't just need to interview disruptors. Maybe you should interview people who's interesting, who can inspire other people. It doesn't necessarily need to be a typical art world person. Maybe someone who's very different, who can come out and say very different things. And also, what is our contemporary lifestyle? What is our contemporary culture? So recently, I even invited a numerologist because, I mean, in our world, in our daily life, we look at a lot of our spirituality. So why not I just invite a numerologist? So it's been evolving. And as the art world is, I've always liked to invite different voices. You can be an artist, you can be an art journalist and art critics, or people from outside. Actually, I think there is a problem with the younger generation collecting art. They all study from America abroad. Now, they only mainly is collecting international artists. This is really a phenomenon because if you look at every country, you have Taiwan people only solely first collecting Taiwan artists, or Africa, you start collecting African artists. You know, every country, the priority is collecting their own country artists first. In China, if you look at the auction market, now 70% is international artists. So the contemporary artists where they collect of the Chinese is very, very minute, very small the market. And because, as I said, most collectors, especially when they are abroad studying, they want to be at par with the international collectors. If America is collecting American African artists, you will find Chinese collecting American African artists. Whatever artists make the name, especially in the auction market, huge, they will be collecting that. And especially whatever America, you know, hot artists, they're all collecting that. I don't want to say whether this is right or wrong. I think this is a phenomenon, because it never happened in any other countries except in China. I honestly think it's a bit sad because for younger artists, without a group of younger collectors supporting them, it's very tough, especially now it's a tough art market. You have younger Chinese artists which have more international collectors collecting them than their old Chinese counterparts. I grew up in Hong Kong, where we were not taught about Chinese culture. But these kids is from a very Chinese traditional family, from a Chinese school, even if they study in an international school in China, but their Chinese culture is not like us. So I was a little bit lost about it. Hopefully, when they become more confident, they come back, they will find themselves like what I did. I'm not saying that they should be limited. Mm-hmm. I am saying that, yes, go hard. It's great that you're collecting international artists, but please look at some Chinese artists. All right. You have to look at the Chinese. You look at the international. And then you understand this cross-cultural dialogue. Because just having a collection, just having international artists living in China is meaningless if you don't root yourself in your own culture.
Well, I was interested to note that you meditate and chant every day.
Today I did. I have to dash to the cathedral, so I didn't. But usually, yes, every day I do. It calms me down.
I think also helps reconnect with the natural world and our inner life.
Yes, I met Rinpoche, a living Buddha, in 2008. And then I converted. I became a Buddhist. But I still go to church because I went to a French convent school. I like the philosophy about Buddhism. And the main thing is they ask you to find yourself and to be yourself. And I think that has always been what I practice, to find myself, to be myself. I never realized that it was a Buddhism philosophy. So from then, I start reading about Eastern spirituality. I start talking to a lot of these spiritual people. And also what is amazing is when I speak to the Chinese abstract artists, they all talk about Taoism. They all talk about Buddhism and how they practice in their artwork. Yeah. So that becomes more prominent. That also inspired me to research more. When I was young, there's nothing called ADHD, right? So I was jumping up and jumping down. And my father forced me when I was age 4 to do calligraphy so that I would sit down, learn how to be focusing, learn to be patient and all that. And I hated calligraphy. I mean, intensely. So from calligraphy, I was forced to do Chinese ink brush painting. So I was doing that until I was 11. Then when I was in UK doing my A-levels, I was lazy. So I thought I could do art. Because then when I was doing art, I was implementing my Chinese ink brush techniques into watercolors. So I did start painting in watercolors to pass exams, not just because I'm interested in it. But I have to say, when I start painting, it also calms me down and also makes me focus because I always do too much every day. You know, if I do 3 things less, then I'll be punctual. But no, I want to squeeze everything in. I always say to myself, if I'm alive, I want to live fully every single moment in my life. So I have to utilize it. So I never have enough sleep. Never be fearful about failures. Failures are good, especially when it happens at young age. But failures means that you have to learn from it, not to commit the same mistake all the time. So I always say that, and also take a positive. Always be positive. Take a positive view on everything you do. Even if you are at the wrong, learn from it. Today, the world is very divided, lots of fractures, and it is the time where art and culture is coming into a big play, because art is about soft power. If we want to resolve misunderstanding, art is the best way to communicate. So use this.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.